Welcome back, everyone, to one of my favorite days, Fridays, because tomorrow's the weekend and it's so great. Also, because we're gonna throw out some trash. And thirdly, because we got Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
You know what, John? Today took a minute for me to get going. But I'm here, I'm excited. I see your beautiful shining face. Before Spicy Mike, we had not that exists. I did improv a song about your beautiful back, which I don't think I've ever seen, but still. And you made me promise not to sing it during the show. And so I respect your wishes, but people need to know that it exists.
I wasn't broad enough in the prohibition for you referencing it during the actual show, I suppose. So you got me there.
John knew when I promised not to sing that song that I was going to wait for Spicy Mike and then start doing basically something about like your upper neck or something.
Don't do either of those things. By the way, we had a last minute wardrobe change before the show because I was informed by Brett, who is far more experienced in this field. He's done work with Marvel and everything and commercials. That I should not wear a fully white shirt, which I get, but I'm now hot because I threw on this jacket and it was a perfect temperature for this white shirt. So at some point during a break, I might just change it up. You know,
it's fine. I just told John that like there are literally two things they tell you about being on camera. One is don't wear tight patterns because it gets that like it's called moiré-ing. It looks insane and starts strobing. And the other is do not wear a white shirt. And there's John who's got muscles and they increase the amount of screen. I don't know if you heard the song about his lower back, but it invoked his actually. Musculature.
Glad that they didn't. Okay, someone said jacket off, John. That's Jim Jordan is the one who takes his jacket off. I don't do that, but I might because it is getting really hot in here. And I want to be comfy, you know, on a Friday. And like, you know, it was Brooke. She says someone John. Offended. Okay, well anyway, look, if you have just logged on, then if this is the first podcast of ours you listen to, you've just had the experience that has caused me to unsubscribe from 50 podcasts because you have no idea what we do. Oddly enough, what we do is political commentary and analysis, and we will actually be doing that through the course of the next 88 minutes or so.
But first, John's shirt.
No, first songs, second of all, a shirt. No, we will be doing that. We're gonna be talking about little updates on the war against your reproductive rights taking place not only in the SCOTUS, but also in states around the country. So that's fun. And also a bunch of updates on stories that we've been tracking throughout the week, including Lauren Boebert. What, if anything, will actually happen to her? Donald Trump, a little bit more about his COVID sociopathy. So that's gonna be fun. Facebook has been making some money off of really immoral stuff. We're gonna have a debate about that. We're gonna have a couple of debates, I think, actually, on the show today. We got some Joel Osteen. We have a wild card for you. We're doing Meanwhile In today. When have we ever done that on a Friday? But we are going to. We're gonna be talking about news from around the world.
I wanna see how many countries I made the intro for 4 years ago.
4 years ago, we're still using. Depends. If they have animals in it, you probably did it. And then we will at the end be throwing away our garbage people of the day. There is still time if you would like to go to the community tab on our YouTube channel and vote. We're always looking to break our record on number of votes, so we'll see what happens there. But with that, also, if you hit the like button, that'd be great. We still do that, right? Brett, with all that said, are you ready to talk about some news?
Desperately ready, John.
Let's do it. It is getting so hot in here.
Just take it off, dude. Take it off before this video. Do it.
Or turn up. But so sometimes I come into the studio and they have the AC set to 65 degrees. Is that not insane? That is way too low to be setting an AC. Anyway,
I mean, I'll tell you, let me answer another question. You should probably know after this much time in broadcasts, lights make things hot. So even if it's 65, it'll never get down there. They set it that way so that when you turn on the lights and it starts heating the place, your face doesn't burn off.
Okay. Well, something you don't know is that I broadcast in here every day. So I set it to 69 and it's delightful.
Nice.
And nice. Anyway, with that, let's talk about some news, everyone. it's easy to focus on the fact that the SCOTUS is right now in the process of probably annihilating Roe v. Wade. And I understand why you would focus on that. It's horrendous. But also, if you could fit in a little bit of attention to the fact that there are other assaults going on right now to women's reproductive rights, that would be great. Let's take a look at what Texas is doing. You know, right now the Supreme Court is considering that Mississippi law. Maybe eventually they'll also talk about the absolutely horrendous bounty hunting Texas anti-abortion law. But in addition, maybe they'll start talking about this. A new law has just gone into effect, limiting the use of abortion-inducing medication in Texas. That happened just yesterday. So this new law restricts abortion medication by prohibiting doctors from prescribing the abortion pill after 7 weeks of pregnancy, which is 3 weeks less than the US Food and Drug Administration's limit of 10 weeks. Why is this a result of like their in-depth analysis of the effects of the medication based on really cutting into how it affects women in each week? And so we think for scientific reasons, we have to take it from 10 to 7. No, 7 is less than 10. They've done that math. They can't do any better math, but they've done that math. And so they're doing it. And so in addition to the time change, the law also makes it a felony for physicians to send abortion pills to a patient by courier, delivery, or mail, specifically requiring physicians to do an in-person examination before providing medication abortion in person, punishable by up to 2 years in jail and a fine of $10,000, because they've just decided that $10,000 is the correct fine for literally everything that they do. And it would apply to doctors, not pregnant people, because they're trying to scare people out of being involved in all of these things. So yeah, Brett, we've got like three different tracks all trying to chip away or cut chunks out of Roe v. Wade. But it might be kind of a moot point because it's possible they'll just completely destroy it right now.
And no one wants it. That's what's so frustrating. I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene with some rando outside the Supreme Court talking about how they had, quote, won the culture war. No, they haven't. Most Americans disagree with her. Most Americans disagree with her.
Well, we showed on the show yesterday, 27% want Roe v. Wade overturned.
That is so small.
That's
and
very
so,
low.
And so I would also argue that that is not America. What they're doing is wildly anti-American. The hypocrisies aside, everything that they've done to get to this point is wildly anti-American. The warping of our machine of democracy by people who want minority rule. And it's so ironic that they're so against minority people by and large that they themselves do not understand that they're in, or if they do understand it, they're lying to America about how many people are behind them. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Well, and so they have turned that a 27%, and I'm not gonna be able to do the math, but maybe it's like a six, they have 27% support in the general American population. And they have 67% support in the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's not how it should work.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah, I mean, the system is set up from top to bottom to take the most radical opinions and then generate an unassailable majority. Both because of things like gerrymandering, as well as the fundamental setup of the Senate that then translates into power over the Supreme Court. It also increases your odds of winning the presidency over and above how popular your positions actually are. But we should also remind people that. In addition to all of that, we could fight back against this. Like we could get rid of the filibuster. We could make it so that you can actually legislate even after fighting past all these obstacles. And enough Democrats, a critical mass of Democrats, don't want to do that because they agree with what these Republicans want. By and large, the most important issues. Some of them might say that they're not against Roe v. Wade, but they're not going to do literally anything to stop it from being destroyed. In addition to all the other issues that we've been talking about throughout the year.
Yeah,
so all of that is true.
In terms of Democrats doing anything to stop it, like Sirota's locked in this like debate with people who are saying like, oh, don't get mad at Manchin, you Bernie bro. And he pointed out in September that there is plenty of legislation that can counteract this and go around the Supreme Court. Or at least make it take longer for it to be overturned by this corrupt Supreme Court that's the result of like horrible, cynical, anti-American manipulation of the system. But the Democrats leave it in committee. It's a law that says, okay, if a state passes a law like this, it cannot go against the Roe v. Wade decision, essentially. Yeah. It would be moot. And that would be a congressionally enacted law. They just won't do any of the things that are necessary in order for them to pass that law.
Well, and I think we get to be mad at Manchin for hamstringing the Democratic agenda, almost ensuring that the Republicans are going to take over the House and be in a much better position to win the presidency. And we're already facing a decades-long battle to retake control of the Supreme Court, and he's making that even more difficult to even conceive of working. So, yes. By the way, as a general point, we often have, especially when the Supreme Court starts to weigh in on something really important, we have these very predictable cyclical battles on social media about who's responsible for it. And one side will be like, I told you blank was responsible. The other side will say, no, it was actually this person. And it's my contention that almost always the only reasonable position is all of those people were responsible. Like, why do we choose like one person that helped give the Supreme Court to the Republicans? It wasn't one person, multiple people and multiple groups through action or inaction led to this result. Why can't we be mad at a lot of them? I don't know. I guess partisanship is a powerful drug. Also, by the way, you mentioned, you know, that they lie about how popular their position is on getting rid of Roe v. Wade. I also saw a tweet that was showing a text from the NRCC, and it was saying that we need to win this Supreme Court battle. Because if we win, then thousands of lives will be saved. If we lose, the Dems will make abortion legal everywhere.
It is,
and it has been for decades. But again, they create a reality. Anyway, I want to read a little bit more about
this. That is so wrong on so many levels.
Well, if you want to briefly jump in, feel free to describe those.
No, just do it. Just move on.
Okay, well then in that case, let's talk more about what's going on in Texas. And again, sometimes we tell you about things that are proposed laws that might get signed, they might go into effect. So this went into effect yesterday. Texas State Representative Donna Howard says it's been 3 months since Texas imposed a near total ban on abortion procedures. And now lawmakers are once again coming after choice by restricting medication abortion, ignoring FDA and medical evidence of its safety and effectiveness. This 1-2 punch will strip away the ability of Texans to make their own healthcare decisions, and that is its intent. This new law lists 27 different potential complications as a result of using this 2-drug regimen, the medical abortion, ranging from incomplete abortion to death of the patient to complications of future pregnancies, which might lead you to believe that they're doing this because they're worried about the complications. First of all, long-term studies have shown that medical abortion is both highly effective at terminating a pregnancy, and few patients experience significant side effects and can be made aware of those before electing to undergo a medical abortion. They don't care at all about that. They're plugging holes, that's all it is. They made the in-person abortions far more restrictive and made it a coin flip whether you'd be even aware that you were pregnant while you still had time legally to get it. So many people responded by saying, well, you can still, at least for a few more weeks, get this medication shipped to you. So they're getting rid of that. They're inventing rationales. They just want to stop women from exercising these rights. That's it.
It's insane, dude. So what I was talking about how it would, this would save thousands of lives. Like, you're gonna kill a lot of people by outlawing abortion because people are still gonna do it. The Supreme Court has previously decided based on science. That is, Roe is motivated by science about like potential for viability of the fetus to proceed developing on its own, right? The abortion pill, which is different from Plan B, is like according to Planned Parenthood, a two pill process that stops the growth of the fetus and then induces a menstruation, which, you know, empties the uterus of the 7 weeks of cell formation, right? Like, okay, that is medically very reliable and safe up to the 11 week thing. It's like up to 90% effective and generally safe, FDA approved, all that stuff that they pretend that they care about, right? If you outlaw it, people are gonna go get abortions. And if they're illegal, those abortions aren't gonna be safe. They aren't gonna be as safe. So you're outlawing something that based on the science you purport to advance, which is hilarious from this group, you're supporting behavior that is unsafe and it's gonna kill people. So you're not actually pro-life.
Yeah. And none of it's just it's again we have to talk about these things, and we'll say a bunch of stuff that's true. We'll give you information from these organizations. You'll point out the obvious consequences. We all know all of this. They know all of this. They just don't care. It is useful to them to do it. Some of them are true believers. They are radical Christian zealots who just want to see their very specific misconceptions of Christianity be the law of the land. These are the exact same people that were terrified of Sharia law becoming institutionalized 10 years ago. They now want their version to be the law that you have to live by. This is one step along that path. And others see it as a convenient thing to get their base that they see as religious wahoos to be distracted and usher them into continued power. Because the Supreme Court that they delivered is a Supreme Court that will annihilate Roe v. Wade. But that isn't fundamentally why people like Mitch McConnell or others were interested in it. Donald Trump hasn't lived his whole life really aggrieved about abortion. He doesn't care about that. These are a Supreme Court that are going to allow deregulation of businesses, the continued cutting of taxes. They're going to shred any progressive legislation that might be passed through the rest of our life. That is what it's actually there for. And it's a weird position to be in, where what we're seeing right now is very literally a distraction and incredibly important, but not for the people who are using it as a distraction. It is crucial. It is a right that is important. And it is just being used as a callous distraction so that people can save a few $100,000 in possible taxes or spending that might come in the next decade. That's really what it's about.
Right. The annoying thing is the people I disagree with the most in this conversation, I actually respect the most because they're actually being honest. Now, I would hope they would.
You mean like the crazy Christians?
The crazy Christians. Like I hope they find the error in their ways. I have much more disrespect and contempt for the people who use this cynically in order to forward their very materialistic. Like there is a scene in the Bible for this, where this Jesus goes into the temple and says, "My house should be my temple should be a house of prayer, but you've made it a den of thieves." They are taking your religion and using it to make money. And Jesus got really pissed off about that. And he threw them all out. So you need to get rid of them.
We're not a good culture at doing that, as the Joel Osteen story is gonna show a little bit later on. Anyway, really fast, we're not focusing on SCOTUS because it seems sort of inevitable, and we've already told you the important comments that have been made by the justices so far. But I do want to check in just briefly to let you know what Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been saying about the debate that's ongoing, what she sees. And she tweeted, "Reminder that Brett Kavanaugh still remains credibly accused of sexual assault on multiple accounts with corroborated details. And this year, the FBI admitted it never fully investigated. Yet the court is letting him decide on whether to legalize forced birth in the US. No recusal." She also points out that out of 9 justices, 3 were appointed by a man who tried to overthrow the US government and was elected via minority. Those 3 will decide whether the US will legalize forcing people to give birth against their will. Legitimacy requires consent of the governed. They are dismantling it. And again, does me ever expressing, and if I ever express a desire for consistency or a lack of hypocrisy, I apologize for wasting your time and probably my own, but I'm gonna do it very briefly. If the radical, like women's bodies are not their own, if something happens to, we're gonna force you to give birth, God, who cares what you believe? If that group would honestly do 1 or 2 of these things, I would be a little bit more in the position I think where you're in, where like I sort of respect it. If they actually were like, "We're gonna force you to give birth, and then to the extent that we can take the power of government and just make it so that babies are born healthy, they're provided for, we love babies, we just want babies to be safe," they would have such a better case. And I honestly think that would substantially increase the percentage of people that would shift to the anti-choice argument, if they believe that there was anything other than religious zealotry to it. But there isn't. Or alternatively, if those same people that are like, "Women should be chained to a hospital bed and forced to birth children," also didn't then constantly talk about how the Democrats are running a tyranny and you need to call them communists because they're forcing you to put things in your body that you don't want, pretending that they care about liberty and your rights and freedom and all of that. They don't care at all about that. They think that you're a uterus with a human attached to it. And so there's just no consistency. And I know it's a waste of time to even mention it, but I wish I could see a little bit of that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm just slightly classifying stupidity different in terms of responsibility for my contempt. Like I don't like them. I think they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And for those obvious religious hypocrisies that are rampant, like they I call out those religious hypocrisies all the time. They have them. They're terrible. Yeah. But I would say like the cynicism of the in the nefariousness using those folks, stupidity and ignorance, depending on the specific issue there and their knowledge of how terrible they're being, which let's be honest, they know a lot of them, as you know, they know how terrible they're being. There's two categories within those quote unquote, religious zealots outside the Capitol. There are the ones who are like, no. The same ones who are like, we need to save the babies under the pizza parlor. That's one category. The other ones who are like, I don't know, I'm just here because I just want chaos and disorder. And I love to hate, people of color or gay people, period, because I secretly am in love with them. Like all of that stuff. Those people are worse, but they're all bad. And I wish they would see the error of their ways because I'm praying for them. I pray that Jesus guides them to the light of truth that can save their soul from this hypocrisy and damage that they're doing, turning women into government controlled farms to grow babies.
I as you were doing that and you delivered it pretty well, I'm shocked that you haven't had like a Twitch televangelist character. I think we think about it. You've already got that great graphic if you was Jesus. I think that would be pretty good. Anyway, okay. With that, we are going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to give you some updates on some important stories. And I'm going to continue. I was trying right there to needle Brett into disagreeing with me. It happens quite often. I think it's going to happen this next block, but we'll see after this. Somebody called out Brett nibbling the end of his cord there. Anyway, after our
they're
show,
metal too, it really hurts.
Are they? Well, then you should be careful. There is a lot. Is your video blurry?
I stepped back out. I was out of the focal length. Sorry. You do things. I'll focus so I can get further back.
We've got a lot more TDR for you, but in addition to that, there's so much going on today on the network. Indisputable will be up after our show with Rashad Ritchie and Dina Dahl. I will be leading the first hour of The Young Turks with Cenk Uygur and Charles Coleman Jr. JR and Rayvana will be joining Cenk for the second hour. And then I hear there's a Game Busters. What are you going to be busting?
Hang on, give me a second to freaking your button. Shit. John, there we go.
I'm sorry, next time I will let you borrow a better camera. That's more
user-friendly. No, it's not your fault. Yeah, John gave me a camera. He let me borrow indefinitely a camera, and I'm afraid that he hasn't told me he wants it back, and he actually does want it back. But now I'm focused.
Okay, good. I'm glad that you're focused.
Okay, today on Game Busters, we're going to be playing Fortnite, where you can do all kinds of things to make us drop materials and whatnot. It's going to be amazing.
I hear season two is ending.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. I like change. I'm a progressive.
They should change back to the original map. That's the kind of change I like.
I like that. I think that's good. I think they should do that.
They should do that. Anyway, with that though, we have a lot to talk about. So let's jump into our next story. We've had a full week of back and forth over Lauren Boebert's Islamophobic comments from this last weekend and from always just more and more videos and comments from her attacking Muslims as well as other groups. And finally, it has come to a group of 38 House progressives releasing a statement calling for her to be removed from her committee assignments, including the head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, heads of committees, those sorts of things. Now, what does she think? Well, she's not really addressing the controversy anymore. She went on Newsmax yesterday to say, I've moved on from this controversy. Which is how controversies work. When you say something awful, you decide when everyone's done with it. That's how society works. She said, I've made a public statement I made a personal phone call to Ilhan to make things right. She hung up on me. Those are mostly lies. She did make a public statement. She said she apologized to anyone in the Muslim community I offended with my comment about Representative Omar. And that statement, which is not an apology to Representative Omar, is the closest we'll get to one, because technically Representative Omar is in the Muslim community. So she got as much of an apology as all of the more than 1 billion Muslims in the world did. But she has never apologized to the actual woman that she has repeatedly lied about in these remarks for laughter and applause from right-wing a-holes. And the phone call was not made to make things right. She just lied more to her on the phone call. So now we have this push from progressive lawmakers. I want to read a few of the things that people on the list said. Cori Bush said she needs to be removed from her committees, absolutely. She expressed hope that there are enough of us, or we can mobilize enough of us to help leadership see that this is a must. She says House leaders should act immediately rather than waiting to see what the Republicans will do, because we already know what they're gonna do and not do. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said there are a number of options before us, including censure and stripping committee assignments. I do believe we need to take action, she says. Jamal Bowman said that Republicans should strip her, but if Republicans don't, yes, I think the majority should act. And Pramila Jayapal said that stripping her should be a bipartisan thing, but added, if it's not going to be, then we might as well be the ones to do it. But Nancy Pelosi is sounding the alarm, and this is where maybe we'll have a disagreement. We'll see. She said that in this like closed door meeting, that there could be a backfiring if they do punish her, saying this is hard because these people are doing it for the publicity. There's a judgment that has to be made about how we can contribute to their fundraising and their publicity on how obnoxious and dangerous they can be. But she said the rhetoric is dangerous and that the majority cannot allow Republicans to endanger members of Congress, especially because of her faith. So there's obviously a conflict there to what she's saying. She doesn't resolve it. So Brett, now it's on us. What should they actually do?
There's an if and a very clear if and only if here, Nance. You can move on. You can change the subject. You can ignore Lauren Boebert and their clear grab at fundraising if and only if you come up with literally anything else to talk about. What in the holy garbage, hot stinking garbage, has the establishment of the Democratic Party come up with to talk about? If you're like, oh, it's just a really effective messaging campaign that we're feeding into, come up with something like that and do it. But you haven't, unless the only people you can raise funds from are people whose goals, and this is it, it's lazy. I get it. She's old, she wants to retire, she didn't want to come up with, she doesn't want new tricks and whatever. Unless the only people you're raising money from have goals that are diametrically opposed to that of the American people who'd be really happy to vote for you if you just gave them stuff they cared about and made clear already they wanted.
So I agree. I think that that would be great. I don't think it's gonna come from her. But what do you think about the two different approaches? So all these progressives are saying we clearly have to do something. She's repeatedly doing this. Nancy Pelosi, who I don't make a habit of agreeing with generally, is like, well, if you censure her, then she'll be a martyr and they'll fundraise off it. I don't think that Nancy Pelosi is wrong in her comments. But that said, just because you're in a difficult position doesn't mean you just, after all, she made those comments at fundraisers. So they were already fundraising pre-censure, pre-committee removal. So if you punish them, then yes, they will definitely fundraise off that. And Republicans will like it. But they clearly like them just making the comments, which they're making without having been punished already. So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to do nothing? Because doing something might make them briefly happy. Should we just let them continue to generate these death threats against Muslim members of Congress because we're worried that they'll raise $50,000 off of it? Like, what are we actually supposed to do? What would leadership look like in this case?
I like the suggestion that, you know, Cenk has mentioned, that Anna has mentioned, that is just like, why don't we go fundraise off it? Why don't we being them? Like, if you're Nancy Pelosi, you say, why don't we go to Colorado and just say, here's what they're missing. You need to change. And if I get it, so all right, what do I think is the best solution? I already gave it. I think she's wrong. I think people trying to get her off the committees are wrong. I think Nancy Pelosi is closer to right, but still miles away from it. Because answers like that, debates like the one you, and this is where we'll get into debate, debates like the one you just posed are the wrong thing to do.
Is it a losing right argument?
Your argument is no. Your framing in this case is a loser, and it's not. I know you're not.
Well, no.
It.
This isn't framing. This isn't a forward-facing thing. I'm saying, what should our strategy be?
The strategy be I already laid out. Don't acknowledge it. Go out there and start messaging on stuff that's actually winners. Now, for you, my answer is they're both wrong. Option C. Focusing on this and bringing up like hateful, oh my God, this racist is racist, doesn't really approve, provide anything, because the things that would, you've already, if you're being super cynical about it and super strategic, you've already got some, and ask them, they'll tell you. It's like there people feel like they've been taken for granted in certain voting blocks when you go advocate for stuff like this. It would be better, you'd get their vote more if you added in your big tent approach, if you added policies that people actually could get behind. Things that were popular in this bill that you gutted, the Build Back Better bill.
Yeah.
All that stuff, that's the answer. The question, should they kick her off the committee, should they not? They don't need to kick her off committees. And I agree that by not kicking her off committees or kicking off committees, not gonna have that much of a effect on Boebert's bottom line. I think Ilhan Omar might be better served instead of saying she didn't apologize to me personally, saying I am so glad that Lauren Boebert has finally joined our side in this, realizing that any messaging like that from her and her party is wrong. And I can't wait for Lauren Boebert in the future, and I'll cite her even if she doesn't do it because she's laid out her side, to be with me when I call out this similar hate to this in the future.
Yeah.
And I'll say even Lauren Boebert agrees that and fill in the blank.
Yeah, well, look, I think obviously with the call, Lauren Boebert showed that to the extent that her original apology even was an apology, and it's hardly an apology if you don't apologize to the person you said it about. I mean, do we think that she was done telling those versions of that story? I don't think so. And the issue is, I don't disagree with you at all. Strategically, from the zoomed out point of view of what is best for the party and the country and all that. But that said, there's also Ilhan Omar, Muslims. So some sort of affirmative defense, a vigorous defense might not be the most politically expedient thing. But these are still individuals in a group that are continually demonized and attacked, the victims of hate crimes. So that has to be a consideration that they deserve protection, even if it's not politically expedient. Right?
How is this different from all others? Sure, throw her off committees. I don't care. You need a better line than this. They need a better line than this. Period.
Well, those progressives, she did a great job. Ilhan Omar did talking about
more stuff where she gets out there and goes, "Here's a death threat I got, just to make this real."
Yeah, I thought that was very effective.
I like that. That's great. That's the next step. I'm glad that, and I would hope Lauren Boebert would do a better job of connecting the dots about how her behavior leads to this. Anyone who denies that is weird and wrong.
Sure, I agree. I thought that she tried to. She said, 3 hours after she put up her video, I got this death threat. I thought that was very effective.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't worry. We'll continue to disagree, but we're gonna have to do it about something different, perhaps. So we're gonna jump into this next story. It's one of the weirdest stories we've had to talk about for some time, and I am going to file it under the category of semi-speculative. We're gonna be talking about something that was apparently leaked on Telegram by Lynn Wood, who got it from someone else who might have gotten it from the laptop that might have been Hunter Biden's. So bear all of that in mind as we talk about this. I find it to be an interesting think piece. because the thing that was leaked by Lynn Wood is this email that we're gonna show you right now. It is an email from 2014 from Tucker Carlson to Hunter Biden, which is weird. One might not have expected to see something like this, but in particular, the content of it is interesting as well. So let's jump into that. It starts off with Hunter, or with Biden saying, "Hunter, I can't thank you enough for writing that letter to Georgetown on Buckley's behalf. So nice of you. I know it'll help. Hope you're great and we can all get dinner soon." Hunter Biden is said to have replied, "Hey buddy, I need Buckley's CV if you have one handy. Thanks. Of course, getting on a plane now, but I'll ask Susie to send it right away. Thanks again. It's really nice of you to do this." So that was between Tucker Carlson and the then son of the then Vice President Joe Biden, with Tucker Carlson asking the son of the Vice President to help his kid get into college. I believe it was Georgetown. Apparently he didn't end up going to Georgetown, by the way, as an interesting historical footnote. And that is just fascinating to me. Again, it's entirely possible that this isn't true, although as of right now, Tucker Carlson isn't denying this. And in fact, Tucker Carlson has talked in the past about knowing Hunter Biden years ago. So there's at least some basis to believe this could be true. Before I give more of my commentary, Brett, what do you think?
Dude, I struggle to find a whiter news peg than a headline with these words in it. Tucker asks Hunter to help Buckley get into Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're dude, wrong. Like, meanwhile in Brooks Brothers, like that's where we're at with this.
Meanwhile on the dock.
Yeah, meanwhile inside a boat shoe.
Exactly, broadcasting from a boat shoe. Okay, so there's a few, I think, fairly obvious things about this. One, so this is 2014, which is simultaneously a long time ago. And also not that long ago, like it's pre-Trump in politics, right? Although, you know, Trump was doing his birther stuff. So to put it in perspective, 2014 was 7 years ago. Tucker Carlson, I don't believe even had his own show at this point. He was just awful on the network in general. So it's 7 years ago. It's also 6 years into the Obama presidency. And this guy who had been on Fox being awful, and I'm gonna demonstrate how awful he was at that time in a minute, making a whole career off of attacking the Obama administration and terrorizing people to be scared of Obama and all that, was trying to get the son of the vice president to help his kid get into a college. Like, if the swamp and the establishment is anything, is it not a right-wing pundit getting the Democratic vice president's son to help his kid get into a school that apparently he isn't qualified for, and then going to dinner together, and then going on Fox News and demonizing the vice president? But they're fine because apparently all that political stuff really means nothing to them, and they're just using each other for benefits and then going and getting a tomahawk steak or something, and it's all good. Because all that political stuff is just fluff. That's how we make more money, but we don't really care about any of that.
Like, at this point, Hunter Biden was like already the one in trouble for stuff. Mm-hmm. Like Hunter's history, that his storied past, like I wouldn't doubt that they were in, they both were hanging out in the same cloud of coke smoke. Like Tucker and Hunter, they both reek of that high society BS, and it's true. Like, what is most astounding to me is that these so-called populists of the right wing have gravitated toward two sides of a coin that couldn't hate each other more, right? Their two choices are Donald Trump or Tucker Carlson, you know. New money Gatsby, old money Gatsby. Like they're both just this weird, disgusting, like gilded age symbolism of how you're so screwed. Because there you got Tucker Carlson, who's like this establishment figure, lots of generations of family money, got the haircut, got the bow tie to match. And then Donald Trump, who is like the sludgy version of the rich guy. But neither of those two categories of rich schmucko gives a rat's ass about you.
100%. And this is the sort of story that I think in theory should break through, and it will not at all. Revealing like the fundamental lie, like revealing the grifts doesn't break through, because the reason the grift works is that they have co-opted these people's minds and they have convinced them that they're the only arbiter of what is true. Andrew Lawrence had a great tweet though. If Chris Hayes had asked Don Jr. for a letter of recommendation to get his kid into some elitist preschool, it would be the lead story on Fox News every hour until Monday, which is indisputable. But the Tucker Carlson thing doesn't matter.
But
and
that
Fox will continue to demonize Hunter Biden, but they were getting benefits from him. And I want to be clear, he's having this like jolly good conversation with Hunter Biden. Maybe we'll go to dinner. I was curious. It was 7 years ago. Maybe Tucker Carlson was a totally different person. I don't know. So I went back to November of 2014 and I found what Tucker Carlson was getting up to. And so I'm gonna play you a bit of video. This is Tucker Carlson on Alex Jones's show in November. So this is 1 week before the email you saw. So he did this video and then he emails the son of Joe Biden to help him out. So here is what he was up to.
Saw what Ben Stein on Fox News saying he's the most racist president ever. I don't know if I agree with that, but he certainly has race baited and used race more than any president in recent history.
Exactly.
What do you think about Obama?
I have no idea what's in his heart. I have no idea what his true beliefs are, but it's very clear. They've made it as clear as it's ever been in the last 2 weeks that they're willing to use race to divide the country and get out the vote and use racial fears to get their base out to the polls. And I think it's effective. It works. Fear works. It works for me, by the way. I'm motivated. When I'm afraid, it motivates me. I think human beings are all that way. But in the case of racial division, there's a consequence that lasts far beyond Election Day. If you stoke people up along racial lines, you get ethnic politics. And look around the world. You've traveled. You know, practically every other country on the planet is divided by ethnic politics. We haven't been historically. But we're moving in that direction, and it's really scary because ethnic politics doesn't go away. If you and I disagree on an issue, the issue can be resolved and we can become friends again. If we're divided by race, race is immutable. It doesn't change. We're always divided, and those divisions can be bitter. They can turn violent. I mean, you don't even want to play with that stuff, and they're doing it in a big way, and it's reckless.
Now, I know what you're going to say, but wait. He's been doing that ever since with the great replacement and all that. So it's weird for him to say that and then go on to say that they're importing voters. But I want to be very clear. You can go watch the extended video. He's doing the great replacement in this video, saying that they're bringing in voters for permanent political power and they're trying to scare people along racial lines, which he would never do. So he says the Biden administration, the Obama administration with Joe Biden as vice president, is trying to balkanize America into permanent racist politics. Okay, that was a good show. Hey, Hunter Biden, could you get my kid into a nice school? It's just, it's all BS. It's all BS.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Tucker was just doing critical race, like his version of critical race theory. Him saying that like race, the folks who, he knows he can't deny that racism is a problem in America. So he gets mad at people for bringing it up. That's like saying, how dare you bring up this fire in this house? Are you trying to divide us? You're trying to get us to leave this beautiful house. It's always been a beautiful house. It's like, it's on fire. Let's fix it. And he gets mad at you for pointing that out.
100%. And by the way, just to tie in with the fact that he was being all gushy about Alex Jones this week, he was just going on Alex Jones's show in 2014. All the crazy conspiracy theory stuff about the gay frogs and the weather beams and all that. So Alex Jones was already doing that. He'd been doing that for years and years and years. Tucker Carlson just went on his show.
This is his like training.
Anyway, okay. My head is gonna explode, but more importantly, Marissa's head is gonna explode. So I'm gonna end this block. We're gonna go to our break. When we come back, Facebook making money off of some insane ads. We're gonna evaluate them after this.
Here he is.
Okay.
I like
Facebook has assured us over the past few years that they have increasingly taken seriously misinformation, hate speech, calls to violence, and all of that. And they've made some improvements, but boy, do they still apparently have a long way to go. They have apparently made in just the last few years, $780,000 from just clothing ads continuing to spread the same sort of stuff from pages like Ride the Red Wave and Next Level Goods. So like they'd previously said that they banned misinformation about vaccines. Okay, well, you can still get ads and they make money off of ads for shirts like Slowly and Quietly, But It's a Holocaust. That's a vaccine needle and it's a Holocaust apparently. Another shirt, by the way, you can also get that same thing as a mug or a doormat. Imagine a person who would have that as their doormat. Proudly Unpoisoned, they're making money off of those ads. That one was mainly shown to men, shockingly. Mainly in Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, and California. So you might see that around you in California. The page Ride the Red Wave ran ads for a sweater that said, I'm originally from America, but I currently reside in 1941 Germany. And you can see it right here. You can get it as a t-shirt too. Don't you just wanna hang out and have a beer with the person who would put that on a sweater? You could also get a Make Hanging Traitors Great Again shirt. They had those ads. Seems a bit violent. And by the way, like they end up, these little pages, they pay for exposure and they get it. They get over 1 million ad impressions per ad, despite the fact that their sites only have 10,000 followers and 7,000 followers. So they are very much getting their money's worth. And apparently so is Facebook, because they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars off ads for those abysmal shirts. What do you think, Brett?
Give the money back, Mark. Put it towards vaccine. Just do it. Done. Yeah. Now, do it. I'm tired of hearing these stories where like right wingers put pressure on you and you cave. And when people pressure you to do the right thing, you don't. Yep. It's the truth. He knows it. He knows it. That if you mount a pressure campaign on Mark Zuckerberg, he'll cave because he still wants to be liked.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I think a combination of wants to be liked and like, disagree with me if you want. The sum total of his decisions over the past 10 years seem to me to be very inconsistent with him being either ambivalent about all this political stuff or in any way left leaning. Like he has to be to some extent sympathetic towards these points, or like, he just doesn't know or care anything about politics. So he just assumes the right is right.
Yeah, Slowly and Quietly, But It's a Holocaust and Proudly Unpoisoned should be banned. Honestly, I don't think I'm from originally from America, but I currently reside in 1941 Germany should be banned because it's not explicitly like misinformation.
Yeah, it is a political disagreement. I just think they shouldn't be making money off of promoting it. Like if people want to wear these shirts or put these shirts on Facebook, I've seen worse shirts than all of these, I think. They're abysmal, but here's the fact that Facebook's making money off of it.
Here's the question that I need them to answer for me is like, they're probably come back at you with like, it's a very big Facebook. There's a lot of things out there that we can't really figure out how to fix it. But you figure out so many other things. And you figured out who to get those ads to. No, there's an automated buying situation, which you probably should revisit because of how it reflects on you. And you can't, they can't deny what they've done to America. Like social media companies, at this point, they're past denying it. They need to accept the fact that they have responsibility for this because of how big they are, period.
Just really fast, let me run you through a couple of the evolution of this. So back in June 2020, Facebook removed Trump ads with a symbol used by the Nazis. The campaign called it an emoji. It was clearly a callback to that. So that was progress. Back in 2017, ProPublica asked, when ProPublica asked Facebook about it, they finally stopped directing pitches on the news feeds of almost 2,300 people to topics like Jew hater, how to burn Jews, or history of why Jews ruin the world. Now, to be fair, Facebook said those categories were created by an algorithm rather than by people. And I guess that's better. That there were enough people right. Who were just talking about that stuff that the algorithm's like, oh, that's a community.
Better, but not good. Like these better, are things they good. Need to fix and they need to come back to me and show me their work.
Exactly. And they're still selling the shirts with the Holocaust stuff. Anyway, thank you everybody in our linear platforms for watching us. We will have to bid you adieu. But if you're on our members app or on YouTube or on Twitch, we got a lot more news, including what's hiding in Joel Osteen's walls, news from around the world and meanwhile in, as well as our garbage people of the week. That is coming up after this brief break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.